It's the regular city council workshop, it's Monday, November 2nd, 2015.
I'd like to welcome everyone to tonight's November 2nd city council, fellow city council workshop. Would you all please rise? Ken Johnson's going to lead us in a short prayer and the pledge of allegiance.
Father God, we thank you for this day that you have given us, and we thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight, that you could be with us and help guide us and give us the wisdom and to help make decisions tonight that are very needed much for the city. And we also thank you for the many blessings that you have bestowed upon the city and that you continue to do so. And for this, we pray in your name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May be seated.
Does anyone know what's going on with John? Wade, have you heard anything about John?
He didn't call me.
He didn't call. We'll move to item 1.03, roll call. I assume tonight, John, all the council members are present, except for John Lawless. And he hasn't called, which means he's probably going to be here. He just got delayed, so maybe he had something come up at work. I would entertain a motion to excuse John Lawless.
Make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 1.04 is our citizen input section of the city council meeting. This is where citizens have the opportunity to address the fellow city council. If you would like to address the council, please raise your hand. I'll recognize you. And you can step to the microphone, state your name and address for the record, and we'll give you up to 5 minutes to address the council. Is there anyone here tonight who desires to address the fellow city council? Okay, hearing none. We'll move on to our current business. I'll remind everyone in the audience, tonight is a workshop, so there's no decisions be made tonight, but we will hear testimony, we will receive information, and decisions, actions by the city council are taken at our regular second and fourth Mondays. Item 2.01 is the Beautification Committee report, and we have with us Lynette Carruthers. And she has a brief report for the council.
My name is Lynette Carruthers. I live at 830 South Skylark Way, Othello. Evening, you guys. It's good to see you tonight. I'll be giving you an updated report on the progress of our Main Street lighting project that's taking place between 12th and 13th Avenue, and also want to share with you the possibilities we're looking at for completing the next block this coming year. Just to review, in case you don't remember, this project is being done as a community service project, and the Beautification Committee being that community service organization. And under the RCW that allows us to do this, and that RCW is listed in your agenda memo, under that RCW, we can use our local people for this project. The different subs do not, we don't have to go out for bid. And what that has allowed us is to bring our own people, Farmers Electric for our electrical, Doug X for our concrete work, and they have been able to just come on site and do exactly what we've needed to have to have done. They're working with us for the second year now, and really have buy-in to this project. They're proud of what's been accomplished and are just have been very, very anxious to come on board again and work with us this second block that we're in the process of completing. Under this RCW, the city is able to donate up to $25,000 per year toward the project, and you have done that. Last year, you helped us complete the first block, and this year, you have made that donation as well. And that will be going toward the infrastructure for this current project. And we're very, very grateful for that. So thank you, Council, for that decision. Last week, I wrote a check for $34,000 for the above-ground lights that you'll see on the coming block. Every penny of that came from the citizens of this community. It is amazing to me the generosity that has been shown toward this project by individuals, by businesses, by some of our civic organizations. It's just been very heartening to see how people have contributed to this project. The activity you're seeing on Main is basically concrete panels being pulled, and where you see the panels being pulled, several of those places will have a light installed, but some of the holes you're seeing in the concrete have also been for the boring that has had to take place under the sidewalk, because you need an entry and an exit for the bores. And so that's basically what has happened so far. Our install will take place beginning this next week. We're at a dead standstill right now because several of our guys are in the mountains. It's elk hunting season. And so we'll look forward to the project proceeding when the guys get home. I would fully anticipate the project to be completed by mid-November and hopefully before snow falls. Something that happened this year that was unanticipated, in order to bring power to the block we're currently doing, we had to go to the stoplight on 11th, and that would be in front of Leprechaun. So we had to go a block down the road and bore on both sides of the street to get back to the current block. This has almost doubled the boring distance, therefore the boring costs. So it's been kind of a white knuckler considering getting our bills paid this year, but it's going to happen thanks to the city's donation, and Farmers Electric people have come through in such a big time way. Farmers is donating all of the electrical they're going to be doing in our current block, every penny of it. And that's going to help us pay for the boring and some of the other expenses that are being incurred. The positive of the boring having to be done this year and paid for this year is that's a big ticket item off the table for next year. So the Leprechaun block, the boring will have been completed. So basically, we'll have concrete costs, electrical costs, and of course the lighting. We already have three lights for the next block. So beautification will be raising funds for lighting for two more blocks, and then we'll be ready to order lights and get the next block in place. So I'm pretty excited about that. And we'll take care of the fundraising beginning probably very shortly, and we will do what we've done for the past 2 years to raise money. We will be having our Banners and Blooms event again the first Friday in May, and that's been very successful for us, and it's been a fun night out, so we'll look forward to that once again. Something I wanted to share with you folks that some of you know, some of you may not know. The Beautification Committee is a new nonprofit organization in Othello. We received our 501(c)(3) category just this past month, so we're very excited about the possibilities that that brings to the picture. And one last thing, our Christmas lights arrived today. Molly called me at 11 o'clock, and the truck was down at Public Works. So we have the big shooting star Christmas lights ready to go on the new block when it's in place, probably right after Thanksgiving. And Avista is doing our install, and they put up our Christmas lights, so we're very grateful to them as well. So that's what's going on with the Main Street project, folks. Do you have questions?
Council? Gina? You were at the committee meeting last week. Did you have anything else to add? The Beautification Committee. So I'm wrong? You weren't at the meeting? Oh, that's right. Sorry. Last week? No.
No, I was not at the meeting.
Okay. All right. Well, I do want to say that the $34,000 raised by the committee through the citizens, not only is the Beautification Committee, Lynette, and yourself to be commended, but probably in all regards should be honored. You are doing a tremendous work to bring a signature theme to the community of Othello, and we just couldn't be more proud of you, the effort that the committee has done, and we really appreciate all of that effort, and we look to partner with you going forward.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, thank you. Our next item is 2.02. And tonight we have with us representatives of the Adams County Pet Rescue. Pet Rescue's annual report is usually given to the City Council around budget time, and Kaya Grant is here with us, the president of the Pet Rescue. And also, we have, and Kaya and her entourage is here with us.
Gina Sorensen, our vet from Satchel Vet Clinic, and Jessica Alvarez, our shelter director. And we have a PowerPoint presentation for you. Sure. It's been a big year this year. We, as you all know, we finished almost finished our build. We spent the past couple of years looking towards moving into our new facility. This is where we came from, the city town that you were kind enough to let us use for the last few years. There's Heather, our control officer. She helped put up some of the stuff like there. There's our new facility. We have a cat facility. We have dogs. We now have washer and dryer, which is pretty exciting. These are some of the projects we're looking for. We'd like to put a chain link fence around the back of our facility. We'd like to get into the Ritzville, Lynn, Washtenaw area and do some more spay-neuter vaccination clinics. It's just a fun thing of what we do. We still rescue, rehabilitate, rehome animals throughout Adams County that end up in our care. Most are stray animals that end up housed at our shelter. But we're also seeing an increase in owner surrenders, not just from the county, but also from the city here. Word's getting out that we're available to help them with their animals. We also work really hard to adopt our animals out, and those that we can't for whatever reason. Little dogs are hard to adopt here, so we transport those and two partners we have on the other side of the state plus Oregon. Our numbers are growing, not just, you know, strays, but also surrenders, like I said. To date, we have had 739 animals come through, and we can't say just dogs and cats anymore. We've had quite a few birds this fall. We have also quite a few rabbits here from the city. Our numbers look like they're a little low compared to the past couple of years, but we also, Heather worked really hard getting dogs back to their homes when they're picked up. Anything we could do to try and keep the numbers down while we moved into our shelter. We got occupancy in July, I think it was, so we opened our doors wide and it started coming. Jessica can talk to you a little bit about the numbers we've had.
So these numbers that you see here are the total numbers so far for 2015. I got here in July, towards the end of July, so right when we were at our peak. As you can see, there were 71 dogs in at that time, and the dogs are a little bit harder to take care of than the cats. So it's at least 10 more than any other month during July. And in the city, also in that month, we had the most animals. We had 41 dogs come from the city that month, which is quite a bit. And we're getting a lot more cats now. As you can see, at the beginning of the year, there was zero cats, and it's been increasing. And we had 15 cats come in from just the city in September. So that's a lot of cats, and we only have room for about 12. So yeah, that's how that went. No, you can go to the next slide. So county animals, you can see kind of the contrast with the city and the county animals. Most of the time the county has a few more, but that's because the county is bigger. Sometimes we can have 75 plus animals in the facility at once, and for two of us working there, that's quite a bit.
This is really exciting. We've had 160 animals returned to owners. I think that's probably our highest to date. That's, Heather's worked really hard to help that happen. And we know that people are calling the city, finding out if, you know, the word's getting out where to call and who to contact so they can find their animals now, which we're pretty excited about that. We've adopted 140 animals this year. Again, that's low just because of our transition into the new shelter. These are some of our partners, Oregon Dog Rescue, Kids Out, Pixie. They actually come to us now because our kids are pretty cool animals, and they come over sometimes once a week, every 2 weeks, to see what we have. And this is one of our success stories. He was found in the county off Bench Road, lying in a ditch. And we sent him to Coyote Ridge Correctional Center to become trained, just because he would just lay there doing nothing. We had no idea he would end up becoming a service animal. Jennifer Dalton adopted him, and he does things like, you can see her foot resting on a peg. If she goes to a door and hits her foot and knocks it off, he can actually come up, pick her shoelace up, and put her foot back on the plate. Okay. He could jump up and grab medicine and bring it to her. He can open and shut doors. He's a pretty incredible dog. He's from Athens County.
Yep.
We've, some of the new things this year, we've moved into our shelter. It's pretty obvious. We're pretty excited about that. We've also become partners with Washington State University. We can send both female and male dogs to become spayed and neutered. It just depends on what they're looking for that week. It could be 20-pound animals, and maybe the next week it could be 65-pound males. So we don't always know what we sent over. They'll come and pick them up and bring them back. One of the huge new things in 2015 are cats. We have cats and more cats. We've never been able to help the cats because we just have a cement building down here. Now we have some room, and we're actually finding out we need more room. The cats, there's a lot of cats up here, not just from the city, but from the county. We've had a leadership transition. We have new board members. we're going strong with that. Another change, we have zero release of unaltered animals. We've changed some of our policy now. Puppies, when they're old enough or they weigh enough, they will be saved and neutered before they're adopted. And if they're too small, we can foster them out. We've also, we've all heard of the parvo problems we've had in the past. We're not saying it's gone forever, but we've increased biosecurity and we're able to do that in our new shelter. We've worked with Sheena and she's been in contact with UC Davis and we have a really nice protocol for biosecurity now. We've also started offering microchips. We had our first dog found because of the microchip we installed just last week, found him in Seattle. He followed his boys to school and picked up on the playground. We've also updated our vaccination protocols. We've got Bordetella. We're one of the few shelters in Washington that has Bordetella, that kennel cough. We're also continuing our plans with the Coyote Ridge Correctional Center crew. They come in once a week to do our hard cleaning. They mow, clean back, things like that. We have some fundraisers planned for this year. We have a new board member, Jan Zula, that's really excited about doing some new fundraisers. We'll have our community dog walk. We've had adoption events. We had a great one in August. We'll have one in Christmas. We're also looking at pursuing some new grants to help with the feral cat problem and also spay and neuter grants. One of some of our goals for 2016 to 2018, we'd like to do two trap and neuter return clinics here in the Othello area. We'd like to do two in Ritzville and Lynn. Like I said, we have a lot of cats. We don't have room for as many cats that people would like to bring to us, so we have to be proactive, and one of the ways to do that is to start sterilizing our feral cats. Because just because they're feral or free roaming doesn't mean people don't pick them up and their kittens or injured and they bring them out. We have a lot of kittens. People could catch kittens that don't run fast enough. I'm sure you've all heard about our trap neuter release we did in October. We had over 170 animals or cats altered. Sheena can tell you a little bit about that. She was very instrumental in helping us do this.
So the great thing about this, how it ended up coming about was Animal House aired their episode that featured Pet Rescue as their first project, and they made contact with the Feral Cat Coalition of Oregon. So I then contacted them to see what was in the works, and very speedily we threw together a project. We had no idea how many cats we were going to catch. And the first day we caught 128. And that was within 7 hours of working with my staff and with Kaya and some volunteers. I guess the big thing to focus on is not only were these cats spayed and neutered, but they were vaccinated for rabies and for other cat diseases. They were treated for fleas. They were treated for ear mites. So their overall health benefits from this. And the big thing to focus on is if you say that each female has 2 litters a year, which is rather conservative, and you say she has 6 kittens on average, we've eliminated 984 kittens for springtime. That's a huge number, especially when most of those are probably going to become sick, diseased, spread disease to other people's animals, those kinds of things. And what, like Kaya said, and maybe what people don't understand, that it's important to trap these animals and release them, and that's the key, because if you don't, if you eliminate them, either by transporting them to another location or by euthanizing them, more cats are just gonna proliferate because the food is always going to remain. The trash that the dumpsters they eat out of, the people who feed them. And so the idea is to get a population that's healthy and fixed. There's been some studies, one very large one in Quebec, Canada, where they started with over 5,000 cats, and within 10 years, they were down to a population of 300 of healthy, sustained cats that were not reproducing anymore. So that's kind of our goal, is we would love for our trend to start decreasing at some point, which means we're making a difference by spaying and neutering, not just the cats, but the dogs as well. I think the trend will continue to grow now that we have a new facility and people know to bring their animals in, because we really can make a difference. But that's just the start. Lots of people have expressed interest to RITSVO, so that's kind of next on our docket for springtime. And hopefully again in the fall.
We'd also like to do another, at least one vaccination clinic with the city. She has said she's already seen a decrease in the parvo cases that have come to the clinic by doing this. We've hosted two. We'd like to do one in Ritzville too. We'd also like to try and host spay-neuter clinics both here in the city, county, in this area, and Washtenaw Woodland area of Ritzville, to help decrease the number of puppies. We'd also like to get into the schools if possible and start doing some educational talks, kind of fun things to help. What we've seen with our volunteers at the shelters, the kids are starting to get interested, and we start, you know, telling them about vaccinating their animals and spaying and neutering, and they're showing a lot of interest. So we'd like to spread that around. These are some of our expenses. The estimated total expense for the year 2016 is $126,870. Our income estimated right now is $102,000. So we're about $22,000. We thought you'd like to see some of the costs per animal. These are the costs, our costs when we adopt an animal out, that's with the spay and neuter, and our price and accounts. Just the cost to enter the shelter, dogs $40.75, and for the cats $36.75. We did this with an estimate of a 5-day stay at the shelter sometimes, many times it's a little longer.
It's quite a bit longer most of the time.
I mean,
yes.
So we've just come to you to ask for an additional $10,000. And what we're looking for the additional money for is for staff. Right now, because of the number of animals we have, we actually need 4 to 5 staff members full time. And right now, we're looking with 2 full time. And there was also the vaccination clinic that started some of the spay-neuter clinics.
It's just, it's really hard to estimate what we're going to need to do these spay and neuter programs because we've never done them here. Just like the cat program we did, we don't know what we're really getting into. You know, we know maybe what the veterinary costs are, but there's a lot of other costs. If we bring in teams, we have to pay for food to feed people, and where are they going to stay? Have to have more people on hand at the shelter for recovery, lots of things that go into it. And really, I guess the biggest thing is providing the staff. The Humane Society of the U.S. provides a very cut and dry formula for what the minimum standard of care to provide for your shelter per animal. And at 50, which is actually quite a low number for what we usually carry every day at the shelter, we need 4.5 full-time people, and we only have 2. So I guess that's what it stresses, is that to continue, you know, we could fill that place with 100 animals and only have 2 people, but we're not doing them any justice. It's not fair to the animals to be in that sort of facility without that care. So for us, it's more about, one, getting them off the street, but two, giving them what they deserve as an animal as well, to try to find them a home or help them however we need to.
Do they have any questions?
Council. It's impressive. Thank you. That's really good. The new facility, which I've been to a number of times, is really impressive. I really appreciate the help Sheena, as a local veterinarian, has provided and helped us, especially the, as Kaya mentioned, the parvo protocol from UC Davis that is now a standard practice within the facility to keep our animals healthy and prevent the spread of disease. I believe in our preliminary budget, the $10,000 is a red zone item, which means it's going to be discussed and still hasn't been voted on by our council. So tonight we just want to thank you for the wonderful effort and the great update and the pictures and everything. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
With that, I will go to item 2.03, budget discussions. And Spencer, you have some items on our budget to discuss.
Yes, thank you very much. And just to finish out with the pet rescue, we do have $15,000 built into the budget right now that is part of the that's in the budget right now. Then we have the $10,000 off to the side also. Up until now, we've had a whole series of different budget meetings. We've been meeting with the council budget committees, and at our last meeting we brought everything from those meetings all together, and we presented kind of a comprehensive budget package to the full council, where each one of the department heads discussed their red zone items and their wishes for the new year. Tonight is the first of two nights where we're going to cut the budget in half and look at some of those red zone items and start the yay-nay process. Tonight we're going to be starting with our enterprise funds. Those are our utility funds, the water, sewer, solid waste. We'll take a look at the red zone items in those funds, give you a brief update on the debt service funds, and then finish up with a brief conversation about our REIT and our utility tax funds. And so with that, I'm going to sit down on my computer so I can walk us through some of these funds. I gave you, in your handouts, you'll see a document that looks like this. Zoom in a little bit. So this document is a document that you've seen before, and it talks about each one of our funds, a brief description of what the fund can be used for, and the estimated ending fund balance, the available funds at the end of 2016. I wanted to hit on just a few things here. Tonight we're going to be mainly talking about the water, sewer, solid waste, these funds down here. We have the fund paired up with its reserve fund in each case. And then I wanted to mention the utility tax fund. At our last meeting, the available balance shown was $40,000. It was about $40,000. Here tonight, it is just over $80,000. Let's zoom in a little bit. And so it's just over $80,000, that figure up there. The difference in that change is due to the solid waste fund putting some of the bill for the First Avenue Street project. It would be, the Solid Waste Fund would be paying for the alleyway approach improvements that are going to be part of the First Avenue project. The reason the Solid Waste Fund can pay for that part of the street project is because those alley approaches are directly impacted by the garbage trucks, which is the solid waste utility of the city. And so it makes sense that the Solid Waste Fund helps pay for its wear and tear on those alleyway approaches. And so I wanted to mention that, so there's that $80,000 there. With that, let's go to some of our funds here. The very first one up, we have our water fund, and there are two items to discuss here. One is the VFD, the $500,000 for the VFD for well 6, the variable, I call it the variable flow device. I think it has a technical term. That's not what it's really called. Variable frequency driver. So this is for well 6, and then we have the $300,000 for water line improvements that would be done in conjunction with the other street projects. Both of these items would become, it would be paid for out of the water reserve fund. And you can see on the sheet that we just showed up on the schedule before, the water reserve fund at the end of next year without these items will have approximately $1.6 million minus the minimum fund balance of 200, so about $1.4 million for the water projects to the city. So are these items that we want to move over into the water, into the 2016 budget proposal?
Yes.
I can move both of those over. And, oh, I have my notes right here. So I'll move both of those over, the $500,000 for the VFD and the $300,000 for the water projects in conjunction with the other street projects. This is an amount that we've been spending a bunch of different years. You can see this year we're planning on ending the year with spending about $223,000 of the $300,000 that we budgeted for this year. So that's the water fund. The next, sewer. I skipped over sewer. Here's sewer. This fund doesn't have a red zone item. I wanted to just briefly touch on it, though. This is the that is saving up for a new new sewer treatment facility in our future. In our sewer reserve fund, at the end of 2017, we should have just a hair over $7 million towards that $25 to $30 million new plant that the Department of Ecology is requesting that we implement at some point. So that was the extent of the sewer discussion for tonight. The solid waste fund just had one item, one red zone item. This was $55,000 for alley approaches. And this is just general work separate from the First Avenue project. Every year, our Public Works Department likes to upgrade a couple of those alleyways or alleyway approaches. And so here's the $55,000 for that. Is that something that we want to put into the solid waste fund? And again, this would be paid for out of the solid waste reserve fund. So $55,000, I will move that over. And here we have two other funds that I want to just get you up to speed on. We have three long-term debts that we're currently paying on. One is paid out of the water fund for well 7, and that one is one where we have the final payment next year. Our other two are these ones. This is the Broadway, and the next one is the Main Street GO bonds. So this is the first one, the Public Works Trust Fund loan. We pay about $30,000 a year out of the street fund for this, on this debt, and we'll be paying that through 2026. And then in our other debt service fund, Fund 225, this is for the Main Street construction project that we'll be paying every year through 2035. This fund, this is one where we've been paying roughly $135,000 a year. And this year, our City Hall bonds matured, or we made our final debt service payment on our City Hall bonds. That is gone. So we're going to be picking up the principal portion of our Main Street construction GO bond payments. So that's this other $110,000. So this bond payment is going to be about $245,000 through 2035. So those are our two debt payments besides the one in the street fund that expires in 2016. In the last 3 years, in 2014, we dropped one of our debts. In 2015, we dropped the City Hall debt. 2016, we'll be dropping the water, the Well 7 debt, and then we'll just be left with those other two debts, $30,000 and $245,000 apiece, respectively. Those are our debt service funds. And then the last part of the conversation was just about our real estate excise taxes and our utility tax fund. I already hit the utility tax fund early. The difference between the $40,000 and the $80,000 for the dollars that we have available. And so I don't really need to talk about that one unless you have other questions. Then I also wanted to hit on the real estate excise tax fund. In this fund, we anticipate ending the year with about $97,000. And again, these dollars are restricted by RCW to be used on capital projects for the city. Things like the RCW list, maybe 14, a dozen, dozen and a half different capital type expenses that we can use this money on. These are streets, street lighting systems, sidewalks, park facilities, rehab, reconstruction of city buildings, those kinds of things. This year in our street fund, we're paying, in our utility tax fund, we have a $190,000 transfer from our utility tax fund to our street fund. If we want, we can use some of this $97,000 to help fund the street fund also. So these dollars are available for us to use, and we'll talk a little bit more about these at our next meeting, part 2 of 2. So we have the real estate excise tax dollars, and the very last one here is the utility tax fund. And like I said before, we anticipate having about $80,000 here to work with for the 2016 budget. These are all summarized on the funding sources and descriptions chart that I showed you earlier. So here's the REIT, almost $98,000 there, and then $80,000 in utility tax funding. With that, at our next meeting, we'll be hitting the general fund and the street fund. So I anticipate more discussion at that meeting, and we'll be talking about what do we want to do now, what can we do, what can't we do, and what do we need to wait for with some of the items we might need to wait until we get into the year a little bit more before we can make a final determination on some of those things that we want to do, just to make sure that we'll have the money for those projects. With that, I am done for the night, and we'll bring this discussion back to you on the 9th, next Monday night, and we'll talk about part 2 of 2.
Before we do that, Council, do you have any questions, Ms. Spencer, on this budget? I'm clear. You're doing a great job, Spencer. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And so we'll have 2 of 2 at our next meeting, and then our final November meeting is at the 23rd, 24th. The 23rd, that's when we anticipate passing the budget. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. And at 7:44 p.m., we're going to move to item 2.04 on our agenda. We have our police chief, Phil Shank, with us, and he has a number of ordinance changes that he's recommending.
Mayor and Council, this should go fairly quickly, I hope. I have some encouragement to do that. A while back, Code Publishing, who we put all of our municipal codes on the internet with, had gone through and done an audit of our codes and had created a report for us that identified a whole bunch of them that had problems. So a lot of what I brought in front of you tonight is housekeeping. This is all for discussion, and what I'd like to put out for council is if you agree with the changes that we're recommending on these, then we could actually put them on the consent agenda for the next meeting and move them through very quickly. And the reason, and that's the reason we're doing this, is so that we don't tie up meetings that could be used for budget stuff. So the first one is volcanic ash removal, RCW, or, and I won't even read it, but the issue with this one is it's a misdemeanor. If there's a violation, we cannot have any municipal codes that are misdemeanors. They have to be civil infractions. So the ones that are misdemeanors, you know, our recommendation of this one, I don't anticipate having another volcanic eruption in the near future. So in this case, I'm suggesting the repeal of this ordinance, and we could establish a new one later on if one of those mountains decides to be unruly. Any questions on that one? Okay. The next one is parking, OMC 9.08. There's actually several changes that we identified to this one. One is it's a misdemeanor to violate it, so we had to adjust that to a civil infraction. But additionally, code publishing found that Hamlet does not intersect with 12th Avenue, and that is true, it does not. So what our recommended amendment is that we go to the 1200 block of Hamlet, or I'm sorry, 7th Avenue. South side of Hamlet Street from 7th Avenue to the 12th block. And that would be the 1200 block instead of a intersection with the street. Any questions on that one?
I have a question about this ordinance in general, though.
Sure.
Some of these that's on here that restrict you on the parking, in particular the First Avenue between Pine and Juniper. I'm curious why that's restricted down there at all. And why I'm asking, why I'm bringing it up is somebody approached me here not too long ago. He works down at Quo. He goes to work at 4 o'clock in the morning. And with this ordinance there, he can't park in front of the business. He has to either park in the back dark alley or down the street from his business at 4 in the morning.
And that's on First?
Yeah.
It may be having to do with the width of the street and, you know.
Well, it's only restricted for 3 hours a night. It's only restricted from 2 to 5.
Generally, and I'll speak from experience, that was generally set up in these kind of ordinances for the street sweeper to come through. So if we're not sweeping the streets during that time, we really don't have a good reason to restrict it for those hours.
So then this part of this ordinance needs to be killed all the way.
We can take a look at that. And I can bring that one back to council with our recommendations and our findings on that. So if we're not sweeping the street during those hours, and we don't intend to, then my recommendation to council would be to not restrict it during those hours.
Okay. Yeah, three hours, I thought was kind of odd. Our street sweeper runs during the day.
Okay.
Oh.
That's true.
Yeah. The snow removal is generally during that time.
Okay.
What would council's direction on that one be?
I would talk to the public works director.
Got it.
And figure out what would be best for them.
Okay, we'll report back on this one. Any other questions on restricted parking?
So it's no longer going to be a crime. It's going to be a civil infraction.
It has to be a civil infraction. We can't have any crimes. anywhere where a code refers to a misdemeanor, that would be a crime. One of them, the next one I'm going to bring to you is actually even more special on its wording, but the fact that it's a misdemeanor, that's a relic from when we actually had our own municipal code that was a criminal code, where we are no longer, we're now a civil code, so it actually has to be in a civil infraction. Any other questions on that one? The next one is railroad trains. And in this one, I really enjoyed reading this because it was written back in 1962. And in a nutshell, I am to use whatever force is necessary or place whatever force is necessary if the train is on the street for more than 15 minutes to remove the train. I'm not quite sure how to remove the train, but I'm also supposed to arrest and prosecute the train operator. That would be a criminal. So that it cannot be that it has to be an infraction. So in this case, I'm actually suggesting the repeal of this ordinance. Any questions on that? The next
That's
one,
a good idea.
The next one is load limits. And again, this is another one where they identified that it's a misdemeanor. It cannot be. It has to be an infraction. So in this case, we recommend an infraction, or that it be amended to an infraction. Any questions on that one?
I have a question on this ordinance, too,
yes,
actually.
Sir.
When the streets or alleys are closed, I don't have any question about that. It should be just closed as it is. But on the temporary restrictions, if we go with these limits on here, that's going to stop every truck delivery to all of our stores. It will completely stop garbage service. By all rights, even the fire department, their trucks are not legal at these weights. So I don't know if we need to come up with some kind of exemption or a permit process. The county puts the temporary restriction bond also. And I don't know how they work with trucks or anything else, but for example, us, we are permitted to run on those roads even with the restrictions. We have other rules that we have to follow, like running below the speed limit and like that, but I can't even go down these roads empty.
This is currently the law that's in place.
Okay.
And it's a misdemeanor to violate that. And so my first suggestion would be we amend it to an infraction. But at the same time, when I come back to council, when we bring these back, we can also look at what changes we would do. I'll talk to Travis in planning to make sure that we're doing what we need to do to make sure we don't shut business down.
Okay.
Chief, I have a question.
Sure.
As far as load limits, who identifies that we need to impose load limits, and then how is that communicated?
We have no way within our department of measuring the weight of a vehicle. If it's got a stamp on the side up to a certain, we could say the vehicles that are rated.
Excuse me, just a minute. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm going to go before that is to where we set a load limit because of a conditions, like say, in the spring is usually when the county would do it because it's starting to thaw, and they don't want heavy truck traffic to put ruts into their county roads and or gravel roads, and so that's when they set load limits, and then they temporarily, and then they lift them. Is this that, or is this something that is a permanent load limit that you're not allowed to travel if you're like 90,000 gross vehicle weight or something?
To answer your question, this ordinance was written in 1961 with an update in 1974. I doubt it has anything to do with the Department of Transportation recommendations or limits. There may actually be RCW. I did have the attorneys review this. But our focus was the misdemeanor issue, not the actual guts behind it.
Okay.
But we can look into that and make a report back to council on that, too. Any other questions? Okay. The next is the repeal of OMC 2.12 Police Department and the creation of 2.12 Police Department and 2.23 Reserve Unit. Now, the reason I'm bringing this in front of you is the current ordinance actually spelled out pay and benefits for reserve police officers, and it actually referred to some inappropriate codes that establish authorities. The recommended ordinances that I put in front of council refer to the proper RCWs that establish the authority, especially for things like special commissions like Heather, where she's a limited commission. She's not a general commission police officer, so she can't just go out and arrest people for everything. Her enforcement is restricted to animal codes and code enforcement, and that's a limited or special commission in our state. This actually spells out how that's worded or how it should be worded. Additionally, it removes the police chief from civil service, actually lists out what some of those the requirements would be on reserve police officers as we go through this. One of the questions that Terry Kelly Conkright came up with was what were the training requirements of a reserve police officer. Late last week, the state came out with what those new requirements are, and they look very much like what a regular police officer looks like, which is a minimum of 24 hours of training a year and an academy. So we already have the academy in place, where any reserve police officer that is hired has to go to the reserve police academy. Now they'll also be doing the 24 hours of training yearly. But we didn't codify that part. What we did codify was the basics of it, and what I felt was important was to get the paid portion out, especially as we're recreating our reserve program. Any questions on either of these? The other piece is the department staffing. What we did to this was we tied department staffing to the budget, so that council every year is setting our staffing levels. And I believe that's actually an RCW requirement for staffing levels. It also gives us the authority to seize property for Title 69 violations, which are the drug violations. We already have that authority, but this actually gives us the ability to set a hearing examiner that'll hear that, and we've already put that in place. Any questions? Okay. The next one is fairly easy, and that's OMC 6.14. This actually, I believe, now this one doesn't require any repeals, but we're going through all of our animal control ordinances. What we identified is we have nothing that prohibits venomous or wild animals in our city. What this ordinance does is it makes it illegal to actually have pet rattlesnakes, other types of animals that I would really rather not find in our community. But it also includes wild animals and snakes over 6 foot long. The recommendation on 6 foot is a snake, a boa, or some other snake under 6 foot is not likely to be able to wrap around you and kill you or children. Any questions on the venomous and wild animals ordinance? Okay. The next one I expect there probably be a little more discussion on, and that's the chickens and rabbits. So in this case, what this ordinance does is it does, and this is for discussion, should council choose this, it limits or it allows three chickens or three rabbits. There's a $10 a year license fee. It sets the sizes of the chicken coops or rabbit hutches. It sets whether they have a run, and it also sets the setback from neighbors, which I believe is about 50 feet, or is 50 feet in this case. 10 feet from an alley, if I'm not mistaken. And just to give you a little background on this, I think Heather done a little research. 67% of the cities in Washington State already have some ordinance like this that allows chickens. We do this recommendation very specifically precludes roosters. We do not want roosters in our city. Streetlights and roosters really get confused. So at this point, this is open for discussion with council or any changes that you'd like to see to it.
Councilor?
I'm not in favor of this one.
Me either.
So did I have four there?
At least.
Okay. This one will not come back. Okay, the next one is livestock. Now this one's a little more complicated because we did a little more research on this. We actually found that in the zoning, there's also some sections that are gonna be affected by this. So I'll have to bring this one back with a little more detail. But in a nutshell, what this does is it prohibits livestock in city limits, but it defines what that livestock looks like. It also prohibits slaughtering and butchering in city limits, unless it's a licensed commercial business. So that way, if someone slaughters it and brings it into town, they can legally butcher it, or the grocery store could legally butcher an animal. In this case, OMC 17.56.120 would also need to be modified, and I believe we'd have to amend 8.26.030, our nuisance ordinance, too. But, and that would only be if we allowed, actually, we won't need to amend that one because that was only going to need amended if we allowed the chickens and the rabbits. So in this case, what this does is this keeps people from slaughtering pigs and cows in their backyard. Any discussion on that one? And I'm done. The next one is Travis's. Do you want me to brief on this or do you? Okay. Did I make it?
No, that's not what got up here. Good evening. My name is Travis Goddard, Community Development Director for the city. So, Chief Schenck and I had a discussion and we took a look at our zoning maps or our wall maps, and we're trying to map out exactly where section 9.32 identifies the city as having speed limits that are allowed under the Washington State Administrative Code. And we identified a couple quirks that we felt needed to be fixed. One of them was by state statute, all roads within, or all streets within the city are 25 miles per hour, unless otherwise identified. And our code had a list of 25 mile per hour streets, and it was incomplete, so we had, so we decided that we would take that section out, because by default, anything not listed in this section is 25. So it seemed to say one thing but indicate another. We also identified that there is some 50 mile per hour stretch, which is the Highway 24. And there's some question about where Highway 24 starts and where Broadway ends. So we simply changed our code to identify that wherever the county or wherever the state highway is, they set that speed limit. So we removed that language from our ordinance. And then we also, the chief went out and checked the road sections to determine exactly where the roads are posted for 35. And it didn't meet our ordinance exactly. So he added a couple stretches, specifically a stretch from 14th Avenue from Olympia to Lee, 7th Avenue from Olympia to Lee, and then a portion of Lee was incorrectly signed and not on that list. So we changed those. We changed the wording in the ordinance to reflect what it's really going on out there in the community. And then the last thing we did is we added a section of 30 miles per hour, essentially from the canal all the way to the end of the city limits, and that was based upon information that we had gathered using the city's equipment for measuring speed and traffic counts for policing purposes. On Main. Yes, sorry. Any questions about this ordinance or?
So we want to move Main to 30 miles an hour.
Yep.
That was because of information that you got from people that were traveling already. So we're increasing it because people were breaking the speed limit intentionally.
Can you go to the PowerPoint really quickly, the last two slides?
So now they're going to drive 35.
So
if we raise it to 30, yeah, they'll drive 35.
I'm not in favor of raising Main Street to 30. I believe we should keep it at 25, especially as much as pedestrian traffic we have crossing it too.
So what we do, or what we did in this case, is we have a piece of equipment that is a very good, expensive piece of equipment, and we strap it to a pole at a location. We measure out to the length, measure out to how far the lanes are, and then what it does is it counts the number of vehicles that pass by, and it measures the speed. And so in this case, this was placed at 6th Avenue is the cross street, so it's Main and City Hall. It was right out front. This was for my test run. And I set it out for a week, and that's from June 18th to the 24th. and it measures lane one, which in this case was going towards Walmart, and lane two is going out towards Edson Tracks or the railroad Broadway end of town. And so it actually measures trip by trip by hour. It measures the length of the vehicle so we could determine how many truck trips were going through that intersection. And it measures the speed of the actual individual vehicles as they go. And what this represents is, let me back up. It's a speed enforcement evaluator. So the software we have is specifically for police functions. It is not an engineering function. But what this shows us is, in the green zone is theoretically you're not having a speeding problem. The yellow is caution, and anything over red is theoretically a red flag for enforcement potential actions. And it also produces some graphs so that the police chief could take a look at that road stretch and figure out, okay, on Fridays between 5 and 6, there's a high incident of speeding, and then Tuesday mornings, for some reason, you know, from 6 to 7, there's a high number of speeding incidents. So that way he can look at 10 of these around town, and he can assign officers, okay, Sergeant, I'd like you at this intersection at this hour, and then I'm going to assign somebody else from the night shift to be at this location at that time. So that's what the software is designed for. But what we can also use this information for is it allows us to manipulate the data. In this case, the posted speed limit is 25 miles per hour, and then the enforcement tolerance below it is theoretically that number of, okay, they're 3 miles per hour over, you know, 9 miles per hour over. Am I really going to write them a ticket? Maybe, maybe not. In this case, I just set it to zero so that I can get the pure statistical data that I'm looking at. And what it says is at 25 miles per hour, more than 68% of the people are going faster than 25 miles per hour. And in lane one, it was specifically 58%, and in lane two, it was actually 77%. So I can figure out how many trips are going in each direction, how many are speeding. And can you go to the next sheet? And so what this one says is at 30 miles per hour, that number drops to 19%. So what that basically says is 4 out of 10 cars, they're speeding between 25 and 30. So it's a pretty significant number of people in the community are comfortable traveling at that speed. Now, what an engineer will tell you is when you're dealing with road types, a speed limit is set at what they call the 85th percentile, which basically means 85% of the traffic is comfortable driving at this speed on this road segment. And the actual road design doesn't necessarily factor into what the speed limit is, because if you look at Highway 17, it's two lanes with shoulders on either side. It's actually narrower than Main Street, and people are comfortable going a lot faster on the highway because there's less driveways, there's less interactions, intersections are well lit. Whereas Main Street, people travel a lot slower, not because it's a smaller road or it's less safe. It's because people feel less comfortable at those speeds. So what this report also does is, I cut it off in this case, but at the bottom of it, it actually tells you what the 85th percentile. So out in front of City Hall, it was between 29 and 31, depending on which lane you're looking at. And so an engineer would basically say the existing conditions are out there, on average, is a 30 mile per hour speed limit. So there are still 1 in 5 drivers speeding. And so the question is, do you want the chief out there for those 1 in 5, or do you really want him out there ticketing the 6 out of 10 who are going faster than 25 miles per hour? So it's not going from 25 to 35, but it's going to 25 to 30 because the current conditions are that it's safe enough for 6 out of 10 to be driving 30 miles per hour. Actually, it's 8.5 out of 10 to be driving 30 miles per hour. If you get an engineer up here to talk to you, what he'll actually say is, okay, if you put it, if you leave it at 25, you're actually creating an unsafe condition because those 1.5 drivers or the 15% of the drivers are causing all your rear end accidents out there because they're actually driving slower than 8.5 out of 10 drivers. So there's a lot goes into it, and we're just suggesting that the numbers are showing that 30 is what the road could be set at.
Council?
I'm in favor of it.
Any other questions?
I just think if you change it to 30, people are going to go 33, 35. The higher you put it, the faster they're going to go. Just on the highways, you go out there at 60 miles an hour, people are going to do 65 because they think they'll get away with the 5 over. Set it to 70, they're going to go 75. I mean, you could set it to 50 on Main Street and people will do 55. I don't think we want to do that. You drive down Main Street, especially around lunchtime and stuff like that. I just think we're just asking for somebody to get hit in one of the crosswalks. You see it all the time where somebody will stop, the person in the next lane will just keep going.
By that person that's willing to do 35 down the street that can't stop as quick now. No, I'm still in favor of 25.
Well, that really has nothing to do with the speed limits. Whereas, you know, I find that, you know, it's real easy to find yourself doing that. I try to do 25, but it's real easy to find yourself doing 30, and it has to do with the width of the road. The wider the road, the more your perception is that you're going way too slow.
But if you're doing 30 and the other cars beside you are doing 35, you're going to end up doing that fast too.
But I also think that if the majority of the people are driving 30, and say there are those ones that are going faster, then you know Phil's going to be able to have his guys out there to nip that in the bud.
I think if we raise that limit to 30, they're not going to be doing 30. It's going to be 35.
Okay. I think we've got too much of a crosswalk issue, and I know it doesn't have to do. We got
nothing to do with the speed limit.
The availability to be able to stop from running somebody over has a lot to do with the speed.
But I believe they have a program going right now where they're ticketing not only jaywalkers but people who aren't stopping for pedestrians.
Yeah,
and that has nothing to do with speed limit.
My concern is 5th and 6th. There's quite a bit of kids crossing there during lunch.
We have quite a bit between 5th and 7th. We definitely have a crosswalk problem, and that's, I would say throughout town. It's not just on Main Street. Cars don't honor our crosswalks, and our kids don't use our crosswalks. So, especially out here. One of the things I just want to point out, and from a crime prevention through environmental design perspective, and that's what we try to look at, we can enforce and enforce and enforce, and we will not be able to reduce speed limits unless we keep doing that, and that becomes a real high emphasis for us. So when the street is 100 foot wide, especially when there's multiple lanes and it's in a turn lane, people want to drive fast. A good example would be Scutney. It's a 90 foot wide street, people drive in it, but it's only got two lanes, so people drive way faster than 25 routinely on it because that's what feels comfortable. When we narrow streets down and make them narrow, people don't feel comfortable driving fast, so they automatically slow down. And that's the preferable way for us, is to design these slowdowns. And so what we do is we try to create curves in the road, we try to put center islands, and just kind of make it feel narrower so people try to drive slower. Fortunately or unfortunately, I think it's just a little of both, Main Street's quite wide, four lanes with a center turn lane, the natural response for most people is to drive fast. We can write many, many, many tickets out there, and we will, but that's not going to slow down a lot of this traffic. One of the things that we're doing for the crosswalk enforcement, we're trying to educate the kids in the schools to get them to start using the crosswalks. We have officers out writing tickets for it. We're actually going to start stings, and I talked to the newspaper a while back where we actually, and I've done, you know, years ago, where I start walking across with my portable radio, and if somebody tries to run me over, I call one of the cops that's parked right there, and they go write them a ticket. And we do that until we start getting our drivers to the point where they honor crosswalks. But the other side of that is how do we get kids to actually use the crosswalks? Out here, we have quite a problem because the kids walking from the school aren't walking down the sidewalk. They're cutting between a couple businesses, which puts them mid-blocks, and that's where they walk. One of the things that we're looking at, and we purchased earlier, or a month or two ago, was flags so that people could self-flag themselves across the sidewalk. You've seen that in some larger cities where people pick up that yellow flag or orange flag, and they'll kind of hold it out as they walk across, put it on the other side. When they come back or somebody comes back, they move it back with them. But the point is to try to get people to use the crosswalks. We're in that mode now, and I think we're going to be in that mode for quite a while because people in the city don't honor crosswalks. I've watched cars swerving around people because they don't think they should stop for them. We're putting this in front of council for discussion, obviously. If you'd like to change, scrap it completely, we do need to change the other pieces of this ordinance that don't refer to this 30-mile-an-hour increase. We could also change where that 30-mile increase or area happens. So that's
so what's your opinion on this as far as the speed change?
I don't like just trying to enforce speed that's structurally difficult. In this case, it's structural. The road is designed for faster traffic. So we can go out there and I can put police officers enforcing all day long, but that's what we'll end up doing. It's going to be difficult to change the behavior. I think that 30 miles an hour is a middle kind of compromise. It's not too fast. 35 starts kicking people up towards 40. 40 is very difficult to stop. 30 miles an hour is not as difficult to stop. But I think definitely out here, especially at lunchtime when the kids are walking across the street texting without even looking up, that's the issue that we're trying to deal with. And I'm not quite sure.
Do you think it would be difficult, especially when all of our other streets are structured at 25, 7th Avenue, 1st Avenue, and then all of them are going to remain at 25, and then just Main Street at 30 for the driver?
I don't believe so. I think the issue is those streets are not as wide, so people do slow down. And actually, like 7th
Avenue. They do slow down, and the speed limit's 25, but... And when we give them 30,
but those streets we're suggesting stay at 25, yeah. And that's because they aren't as wide and they're not designed for faster speed.
They also have schools on it.
Main Street doesn't have any schools on it, and it's a main thoroughfare through town. It was designed. I mean, it's twice the size of I-90. It was designed for faster traffic, and yet the city and its council has continually kept the speed limit at 25. I mean, the data says that 7 out of 10 people are driving 30 or better, and if you say, okay, we're going to keep it at 25, the council has to then say to the police department, you're letting 7 out of 10 people breaking the law. It's okay. Or you're going to tell them, no, you're going to have to start writing tickets for anybody going over 25. Do you see what I'm saying?
I don't think it makes sense to have our entire police force out there trying to enforce all of those extra people going over 25.
You know, I understand what you're saying, but I also see it as our speed limit's 25, and because everybody's doing 30, we're going to reward you by raising the speed limit because you're already driving that fast.
When you read that, when I read that, that's exactly what went through my mind.
Yeah.
But then the data says that it's safe, so it's teeter-tottering, you know what I mean? You know,
and
what
I
to do.
I don't think that's necessary.
necessarily the case, because it's like I said, you know, the street is designed for faster. I feel comfortable driving about, you know, you just kind of automatically catch yourself driving about 30, and I slow down, and then I catch myself doing 30. It's designed for a little bit faster traffic, and I think that if we raise it to 30, it just is putting it at that more comfortable speed. People will be able to actually drive the speed limit as opposed to driving over the speed limit when they're not meaning to.
Another thing with the faster speed limit, trying to come across the road, it being a really wide road, people are coming at you at 30, and you're used to 25, you're going to try getting across there, and they're going to be a lot closer than you think. And plus at 30, I guarantee you they're going to be doing 35, and so they're still even faster they're going to be going.
I get that, but I this is also the same council that approved four-wheelers on the street, so I don't understand. Yeah.
They're supposed to be following that 25-mile-an-hour speed limit, too.
But, I mean, Mark, you're right. Everybody's going to have to adjust, that's all. They're just going to have to adjust.
You know, and if that's the case, I think that putting out those flags and maybe looking towards having some flashier pedestrian areas might be something we need to look at in the future.
I don't think they're going to have a problem adjusting because everybody wants to go faster.
Yeah, if we solve some of our other problems first, then I would be willing to look at it. But I want to see some of our pedestrian problems and stuff like that solved first before we start creating the speed limit.
How long have you been working on the jaywalkers and you've been doing that for a little while?
Well, I identified the issue within my first week of being here. Mm-hmm. Coming up with a plan on how we're going to actually deal with that. I mean, one of the issues that we ran into was day shift staffing. That is definitely when we have the least staff. That's actually out, you know, doing traffic work. But that's also when we have the most pedestrians. So what we're waiting for now is to actually get the receptacles to put the signs in. And I know Terry's been short-staffed, and once he is able to, then we'll get those receptacles out there. So, and there's no guarantee that that's really going to affect anything. But other cities have had some pretty good luck with it. The flip side is, you know, people are going to steal your $1.50 flags. Well, eventually the 7,900 people that live here are all going to have a flag because we'll keep buying them.
Okay. Well, I think the best way to do this is to go ahead and prepare the ordinance, and that one won't be on the consent agenda, and the council can have another discussion about it and vote on it.
Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Item three is committee reports. Is there any committee reports? The one mayor announcement is this Thursday night at 6:30 at the Senior Center is Turkey Bingo with the Lions Club is having themselves a little fundraiser and a little fun. So everyone is welcome and invited to the Turkey Bingo this Thursday. Having no further business to come before the council tonight, I will adjourn at 8:24 p.m.